And now, back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD, where, of course, the call letter signal means stay well. We at You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, let you take control of your genes so you can live at the highest possible level for the longest possible time. We have a great guest for you today. Dr. Robert J. Evans is an associate professor of urology at Wake Forest Baptist Health in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. That's only about, I think it's about 30 miles from where my daughter teaches at Duke University. She teaches in the graduate and undergraduate chemistry program, so we won't go there. But it is close enough that I've been to Wake Forest, and it's a wonderful place. The urology department has lucky to have Dr. Robert J. Evans, who talks about a PBS, and it's not the PBS that's on TV or that signals the TV network. It's a PBS called Painful Bladder Syndrome. Dr. Evans, thanks for coming on.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Now, tell us, what does PBS really mean, and what are the symptoms of it, and how do you differentiate it from just an ordinary infection?
Well, painful bladder syndrome is a more modern term that we use for an older term called interstitial cystitis. And patients who have interstitial cystitis or painful bladder syndrome suffer from urgency, frequency, and pain. And the feelings that they have are nearly identical to what one would have with a true urinary tract infection. So often they're misdiagnosed. The key difference is that when you check their urine, and especially if you run it in a culture, they don't grow any bacteria, because even though interstitial cystitis sounds like it might be infectious, it's really not an infectious disease at all. It's simply a situation where the bladder is extremely painful anytime urine gets in, and especially as the bladder fills. And that desire to get the bladder empty, to get that pain to go away, is why these patients urinate so frequently.
So one of the symptoms, and the symptoms are similar to infected bladder or an infected urine, is that they want to get the urine out of them as fast as possible, so they urinate many times. And is the urination itself painful?
Most patients actually don't think that the urination itself is painful, and in fact, they often will get some relief as the bladder empties. And that will last for a minute or two, and then as the urine starts to drip back into the bladder, their pain comes back. And they'll often describe it as feeling like they have razor blades in their bladder or ground glass or paper cuts or something very sharp and painful. This isn't a dull ache. It tends to be a very sharp, burning-type pain. And certainly, the frequency of urination these patients have can be tremendous. We have folks who urinate 50, 60, 70 times a day just trying to get some relief from this horrible pain.
So now you've cultured the urine. In other words, I assume it's more women than men. Is that correct?
You know, traditionally, it's always been felt to be a disease primarily of women. And when we looked at the statistics, it was always felt to be 9 women for every man. More recent studies have said it's more like 5-1. But one of the things we think does happen, we think a lot of men are misdiagnosed as having prostatitis or prostate problems. So it may not be as rare in men as we think, but certainly the percentage of patients who are diagnosed is majority female. So what will happen is when we get the urine cultured, if it comes back negative, sometimes these people then get misdiagnosed as having a bad case of overactive bladder. But I think the key thing is that overactive bladder is not painful. It's just frequency. So if there's pain and the urine is negative, we would recommend that everybody be evaluated and considered as that they might have interstitial cystitis, painful bladder syndrome.
So this takes a while to diagnose, but I saw from the statistics of the disease. We're talking, by the way, with Dr. Robert J. Evans, who's a physician in the urology department, an associate professor of urology at Wake Forest. And you can see him on the web at wakeforest.edu/urology. And we're talking about interstitial cystitis, or what used to be called interstitial cystitis. ICHealth.org is one of the websites for this specifically, or what is now called painful bladder syndrome. So they've got frequency, and they need to urinate frequently because the urine in the bladder, there's a desire, if you will, of the bladder to get rid of it because it's so painful. And they have what we call a sterile urine, or no bacteria in the urine. You then go to the step of how do you treat this then?
Well, you know, traditionally in the past, everybody would go to the operating room and undergo a cystoscopic examination where we look in their bladder and look for certain findings. But the current American Urologic Association guidelines feel that if patients have urgency, frequency, and pain of at least 6 months duration with no evidence of infection or other cause, such as cancer in their bladder or something like that, then you can make the diagnosis strictly on clinical grounds. And we have certain questionnaires that we use to help us guide us. But once we find that, our goal is to try to get their pain under control as quickly as possible. And we will do that by initiating both medications by mouth and instillations of agents into the bladder, which will anesthetize the bladder and also try to recreate the abnormal bladder lining layer, which we think is where the problem comes from. The theory is that these folks, for unknown reasons, have a defect in the protective coating of their bladder, which is designed
to protect. So let's go over that. In your bladder, you have more than one layer of tissue.
Right.
And the coating, much like a coating in your stomach lining, is composed of what for the bladder normally?
Yeah, the bladder lining layer is a mucus-like layer that's secreted by that innermost layer of cells, which are called umbrella cells. Well, those cells secrete a mucus-like layer, which is called the GAG layer. That's a short term for glycosaminoglycan. But just think of it as mucus. It's like a thin mucus coating. But we know that urine is very acidic, and that acid in the urine really will burn, and it feels very toxic to tissue. So the protective coating, if it breaks down, the acid will then leak into the interstitial space, and that's where that name interstitial cystitis comes from, and that's where the pain comes from, because acid's going where it's not supposed to go.
And now, so you try and get the acid out. What about just taking a lot of alkaline water, alkaline fluids? Will that help neutralize it or decrease it, or does that not work very well?
You know, it doesn't work consistently, but we do find that patients who keep well hydrated do a little bit better, because a more dilute urine just feels a little less toxic to the bladder wall than very dark concentrated urine. So one of the things we encourage people to do is actually increase their fluid intake, because it'll decrease the pain a little bit, whereas they just often cut way back on their fluids because they're so tired of the frequency. But usually if we can get the pain better, the frequency will begin to decrease.
So it's a paradoxic decrease. We're going to talk about foods people should avoid and other treatments when we continue this with Dr. Robert J. Evans. He's a associate professor of urology at Wake Forest Baptist Hospital in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And his website is wakeforest.edu/urology. We've been talking about, and we will continue talking about, the treatment for painful bladder syndrome, which is a syndrome where your bladder doesn't like urine when it comes in contact with it, but doesn't have an acute infection. And we've learned so far that there are treatments that are oral and treatments that are direct installation of stuff into your bladder. We're going to continue about what you can do with changing food and changing water yourself and other things. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio M.
The all-important family meal. Dinner just got happier and healthier. Why? because kids are begging for crunchy, out-of-this-world, yummy, healthy veggie fries. Yep, they're healthy because they're made with real vegetables. You can choose from broccoli or carrot, chickpea and red pepper, or kale and Tuscan bean, or choose all four. Veggie fries are gluten-free, a good source of fiber, and an excellent source of vitamin A, C, and K. Plus, they're very low in sodium. Veggie fries are a parent's dream for their family. Hey, and parents love them too. So if you want to hear more veggies, please, at your dinner table, look for them in the freezer section of your favorite supermarket or natural food store. For more about veggie fries, please go to eatveggiefries.com. Veggie fries.
Do you have a great idea for a radio show but have no idea where to start? Or have you been hosting a podcast for a while and want to take it to the next level? If so, you need the Gab Radio Network. To host a show on the Gab Radio Network, all you need is your voice, and we'll handle the rest. From technical engineering to full-service audio production and much more. Every show on the Gab Radio Network can be heard on our station on the TuneIn Radio app. Plus, we put all of our shows on our satellite, which is accessed by over 5,500 stations. And here's the best part. You can host from anywhere you want. There are many means to connect to the Gab Radio Network remotely, and our staff of highly trained engineers and producers will make you sound like you're right here in studio. So, if you want to be on the Gab Radio Network, the same network that hosts the Small Business Advocate, Radio MD, and The Federalist, send an email right now to sales@gabradionetwork.com. That's sales@gabradionetwork.com.
Breast cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths among women in the United States. Better screening and treatment have contributed to a decline in breast cancer deaths. However, not all women have benefited equally from these improvements. Black women have the highest death rate from breast cancer compared to any other racial or ethnic group. We can all help reduce deaths from breast cancer. Healthcare professionals can ensure that women get the tests and treatment they need on time. Patient navigators can help guide women through the healthcare system so they get the care they need. Women need to educate themselves about breast cancer and talk to their healthcare provider about how to reduce their risk. The full benefit of breast cancer screening is achieved when every woman receives adequate screening, timely follow-up, and high-quality treatment. Learn more at www.cdc.gov/vital signs.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Fillets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Michael Roizen, MD. Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD, where the call letters mean, of course, that you should stay well, and we hope you do. One of the ways you stay well is by listening to this program, You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, with me, Dr. Mike Roizen, because we aim to give you enough information so you can take control of your health, so you can live at the top of your curve. That's taking control of your genes, because remember, all genes do is make proteins or watch other genes, and which ones of yours are on, you have enormous power over. We're talking with someone who will give you power over bladder problems. You may have them, or a friend may have them, and we'll find out how common it is and then what you can do. Painful bladder syndrome is what we're talking about, and you can find more about it at ichealth.org. IC for interstitial cystitis. You don't have to remember or know how to spell it. IC, no periods there, health.org. And we're talking with Dr. Robert J. Evans of the Urology Department at Wake Forest University. It is wakeforest.edu. And Robert J. Evans is our guest. By the way, in the second hour, we're going to talk about beets and borscht and them. That is beet juice, a quart a day, improving your nitric oxide and letting you have more exercise longer. That is increasing your endurance and increasing the ability of your arteries to dilate and to provide you with energy and stamina. But right now, Robert J. Evans, Dr. Evans, what are the common over-the-counter treatments that make painful bladder syndrome less painful?
Well, some of the simplest things that patients can do to help themselves are to improve their diet. There are certain things on the so-called interstitial cystitis diet that we would like them to eliminate, and that's primarily caffeine, alcohol, carbonated drinks, tea, anything that's very acidic, so very spicy foods are a problem, citrus fruits are a problem, tomatoes are a problem. In essence, anything that the body senses being somewhat acidic will make a difference. And then there is an over-the-counter product that we often use called Prelieve, which if taken with food will decrease the acidity a little bit. In essence, it lets them cheat a little bit on the diet because the diet can be awfully restrictive since so many fruits are eliminated because of their acid nature. So we like to try as they get a little better to give them a chance to cheat on that diet a little bit. It makes it a little bit easier to tolerate.
So we've gone over some food, and we've gone over making sure you keep drinking. What else is there that really makes a huge difference in this?
Well, if somebody does not respond to dietary manipulations and also stress management, because we know that stress, like it does in so many other illnesses, plays a big role here. If we're ready to move on to medications, there are several medications that are recommended in the American Urologic Association guidelines. The most important ones are Elmeron, which is a drug that can be taken by mouth to coat the bladder. And unfortunately, it takes a long time for that to work. We also use antihistamines because, in a way, this is almost like having an allergic reaction against your own urine internally. So antihistamines play a big role. And then certain antidepressants, when taken in very low doses, can help decrease pain and improve the ability to control urination, particularly at night. So those are the kind of medications that we like to do. But in a way, one of the more important things we try to accomplish with patients is to empower them so that they can treat themselves with these bladder installations, because there's almost immediate relief of their pain, and it can last for many hours if they can accomplish that.
So they learn how to catheterize themselves, or to put a small tube, especially women. This is probably easier in women than men. Is that right?
You know, for women, it's really very easy, and we've taught hundreds and hundreds of women how to do this. You know, we'll often let them try a treatment or two in the office to make sure that they like it. And, you know, certainly if they want to come into the office, they're welcome to do so. But, you know, the idea that they might have the ability to control their pain any hour of the day or night by giving themselves an installation is something that we think is terrific, because it lets them take control of this disease instead of letting it control them.
And then you were saying there was something else. Once the installation, what are the drugs, local anesthetics that they instill, or are they contained?
Yeah, it's a combination. We use a buffered lidocaine mixture, because lidocaine or novocaine, zolocaine, all basically the same thing. If it's not buffered correctly to make the pH correct, it doesn't penetrate the wall of the bladder very well, and it may burn a little bit. But a buffered lidocaine is very well tolerated. And then to that, we put heparin. Now, most everybody knows about heparin, and it's used as a blood thinner. But heparin is almost identical in its construction to the natural lining layer of the bladder. So the introduction of heparin into the bladder helps to recoat that bladder. And so it's not just numbing up the bladder, but it's actually helping it to heal. So we think over time, these patients' bladders actually get better and start to work more normally again.
So this is actually going to, if you will, the actual, I guess you'd call it the actual cause of the problem, which is the erosion of that heparin glycoprotein layer and giving them more.
Exactly. We believe that the GAG layer, the glycosaminoglycan layer deficit, is the key. And this is the most effective way to try and replace, replenish, and heal that area. And we think then that, over time they can use the insulations less and less and maybe just transition over to simple medications for protection. And this really is a fantastic way to allow the patient to really treat the disease and not just treat the symptoms. So we want to try to make the bladder better, not simply mask it with an analgesic.
So for more information, I'm going to refer them to your website, which is, there are two websites you've told me about. One is wakeforest.edu, wakeforest.edu/urology, EDU for education. And the other is IC Health, I as in interstitial, C as in cystitis, but you don't have to know how to spell those, ichealth.org. We've been talking with Dr. Robert J. Evans, Associate Professor of Urology at Wake Forest Baptist Health in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, not too far from where my daughter works and lives in Durham at Duke. So, Dr. Evans, thanks very much for spending time with us and for educating us all. And remember, you can always go to hear a replay of this to radiomd.com. Go to the archives of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Look for today's date, and you'll find this show, or look for Dr. Evans' name, and you'll find this show. We'll be right back after the break. We're going to talk about beet juice and its ability to decrease aging.